Blog Talk Radio.
Never.
I said never.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Hotep Alafia, welcome to the Care the Read Room. You have your Omika 7 in the house, live coming to you right from my living room. I am your advocate and your advisor. I am your emperor for this evening. And to those who are newcomers, welcome. And to my old friends, Hotep, we're glad you're back, ladies and gentlemen. And we're going to continue on our segment, The Renaissance to the Mid-40s. And we're going to go over some of those questions. Who were the blacks who fled from their African sharecropping? And where did they escape to? Did they go up north and did they find that there were still problems there? Yes, they did. They found that unemployment was a problem there. Very difficult for them to get into the unions. The blacks were not welcome into the unions as readily as the Caucasians. So there was a difficult time for them when they went up north. Nevertheless, they wanted to make that venture because they knew it offered jobs and a new way of life. Now, mind you now, Roosevelt did say that there would be a chicken in every pot. And President Roosevelt and his wife were very, very well-loved presidents and Mrs. First Lady of the African-American because they offered hope and promise. And ladies and gentlemen, this was during a time that poetry was being written all over the continent, especially by African-American men and women. And one of your poets you might know is Margaret Walker. She wrote For My People. And when she wrote this particular document or poetry, I want you to read some of her work. So when you read her poems, you'll see that during this particular time, her expression of racial consciousness and protest was revealed in her writing. And if you listen to the tone, you'll see she was expressing the pulse of the people. Now, there was also universal qualities of poems that were written. Just like I told you about Phyllis Wheatley, she was writing poems that appealed to Caucasians. And Caucasians thought it was so ironic that she was writing, addressing their culture, that they did not believe that she was the author, and they examined her thoroughly to prove that it was her work. Now, there's characterization in poetry, and there's free verses. And I talked to you about the quadruplets and the couplets and the different standards that they use in poetry. And then they included the parallelism and the repetition. And the main thing that you can look for in the poetry is the balance and the alternation. And when you look at poetry, it can have a beat and it can have a rhythm. I write poetry, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm a storyteller. So sometimes my poems don't have to rhyme, but they do have a beat to them. I'm very rhythmic, so when I speak the poetry, I'm singing the poetry. These outstanding poets all over the land were some of your best people. And as I said, that Mrs. Walker wrote For My People, it was divided into 10 free verses when she wrote it as the standard. And how do you look at, and when you look at this poetry, you can see what she was doing with the standards. And it gives an overall view of the African American experience. And these standards talk of the articles in the African American's life, their past and their present, and doing each phase of their life from the 50s to death, from birth to death, and it explained what went on in their life as a slave. So this author was also a storyteller as well. And the standards is what you look at and the way of free versing it or using couplets and their technique. And as you read these poems, you'll see the rhythm in there. And this, there's some poems also that I wanted to alert you to as well. W.E.B. Du Bois was writing during this time, and he did a lot of debating. And his stuff was so astronomical, he went into competition with Booker T. Washington. And I'd like to read you something from Washington's work and Du Bois. And it says, studying academic subjects is not just practical as learning a trade that one can put to use. Rather than be concerned about civil rights and ought to work, save and invest in profits. Okay, now that was his poem that he went into debate with. And Brother DeBoris went something like this. People should be able to improve their mind and study what they like. Money and property do not guarantee security if one does not have the right to dignity and justice before the law. Now, these were the debates they had, and you might wish to devote a time reading those yourself and looking at who had the best poem and who was speaking here and what type of standards were they using, okay? And then there was Charles W. Chestnut, who wrote poetry as well. And Charles W. Chestnut was the first African-American to master the short story form, ladies and gentlemen. Many of his stories, they dealt with problematic relationships between whites and blacks in the North and the South. And I told you about the boll weevil, which was a problem as well, and the floods were coming in. And he wrote The Bouquet. Chestnut's, when you examine his poems, you talk about some of the relationships between the white teachers and the black students in one of the schools that were established for black children during the Reconstruction age. And in one sense, the story deals with problematic of change. And as he writes this work, he writes it so the aristocrat, the Southern aristocrat, can be revealed in his poetry. And ladies and gentlemen, there were many, many more poets who were writing during this time. And as they were writing, they were telling the story. Ida B. Wells was vividly involved in writing. Mary McLeod Bethune developed the all-girls university and school. She was very influential during this time, developing work. And this was during the Jim Crow era, ladies and gentlemen. I want you to know that. This was a difficult time for our people. And during this time, even though they were getting some work in the artistry business when they came up north, they had to get into unions to be protected. It was a little difficult for them at that time because unions were turning them away. And W.E.B. Du Bois, he wrote The Song of the Smoke. And this was a very, very interesting poem to identify the speaker of the poem and to relate the ideas of the poem in historical context. That's what he was trying to do, to recognize the personification and understanding of the purpose. He began to write this poem so that he can bring about information for our people, okay? And W.E.B. Du Bois, he wrote religiously. He wrote all the time during 1903, he was writing. He wrote The Souls of Black Folk. He wrote this, and I think you ought to read it. It's a masterpiece. W.E.B. Du Bois wrote a little poetry, but his poise often was a little different. His reading in poetry was a little different. And I think you should take a look at some of the Atlante of Atlanta about the Atlanta race riots in 1906. There was tons of race riots during that time. And you can find his work there and read it in the classified area of poetry. And The Song of the Smoke is one of W.E.B. Du Bois' most frequently anthologized poems, meaning that it was anthologized. The dramaticness of this black work, you can see the struggle of what he was writing. And while praising their strength and their contributions to progress, he was writing about what progress blacks had made. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I want you to be very literate. That's what this is all about, teaching you to learn how to be literate over African-American folklore. And it is very important that you make your children literate as well. Read to them and discuss poetry with them. Now, there was Paul Laurence Dunbar. Don't forget about him. He wrote We Wear the Mask, The Debt, Life's Tragedy, and Douglas. He wrote these poems and short stories, and you can read about them. We Wear the Mask, in your own words, you know, he wanted you to explain after reading it what you felt about this mask. And it is a false impression that the speaker and the other presenters in the world are all wearing a mask. Who are the wearers of the mask? Who would be wearing it? presumably African Americans would be wearing this mask. And what emotion does the mask conceal? What does it hide? The metaphorical mask conceals the true emotion of the sadness and the pain that comes from discrimination and oppression, he thought. And the guile is the use of deceptive words or actions to cover up one's true intentions, who guides his referral to the lines. Now, as he was writing and writing, people discover that he was trying to show the true African American. Frederick Douglass was a great orator. He became a powerful spokesman for the abolition of slavery, ladies and gentlemen. And where does Paul Longstumper refer to Douglass' leadership? He talks about it in the anti-slavery movement. He refers to the Douglass anti-slavery orator. And why does he feel that Douglass' spirit is needed? Why does he need Douglass' spirit? He says that these days were even worse for African Americans, and they need someone like Douglass to lead and inspire them. Paul Longstumper wrote this poem long after slaves had been emancipated. And as you know, that they were still working in the fields and had been emancipated in 1863 of that January, but were still working in the fields in June of 1863. What do you think he is referring to, this evil days? He talks about that. Go and get the poem and read it. What do you think he's talking about, the evil days? How does the poet use the metaphors? How is he using metaphors or a ship caught in a storm to describe the crisis of the time? There were many crises for African Americans, many crises, and these artists tried to portray that. As I talk to you about John Henry, John Henry recognized the characteristics of folk ballads. He was very much into folk ballads. John Henry was very brave, and he was strong. We know that John Henry represented a figurehead, and they asked John Henry to race up against the locomotive train, and he matched his width with the locomotive train, and he won. But in reality, in the story, he did perish. Now, nevertheless, ladies and gentlemen, I want you to use some critical thinking when you're reading these metaphors, and I want you to use critical thinking in understanding the oral interpretation of this poetry. Poetry is something that you can get into, and it heals and it works on the sick mind. And as we did this unit for you this particular month, it was to engage you into literary reading so that you could have something to hold on to, like the Harlem Renaissance. And that Harlem Renaissance is where the black writers and authors got together. And they had some dilemmas. There was a lot of dilemmas for them. And they went through tons of racial discrimination. And according to Du Bois, what was the central problem of black American identity? The central problem was crisis, and the literary contribution of women was very much so during this time. As I told you, Ida B. Wells, Mary McLeod Bethune, they were writers, and Zora Neale Hurston, they were writers, and they were involving themselves and participating. A new mood of literature came about, and one of those people were McKay. She brought about the sonnet. And one of the poems is If We Must Die. McKay wrote If We Must Die. This poem describes what African Americans were going through. And what was the so-called Red Summer of 1919? They write in his poetry, he wrote about the Red Summer. The literary models did James Weldon Johnson use. James Weldon Johnson was very much of a writer, and he was writing, and he was also singing songs. Ladies and gentlemen, I want you to understand the language and literary forms are very, very interesting for African Americans. Now, there's another poem called The Mule and the Man, which are very much in demand, and it was in demand at that time. And why was Langston Hughes popular among the African Americans when he wrote The Mule and the Man? What was so important about that poem? You can go out and research this, ladies and gentlemen. Because our time is so limited, we can only engage you to some. Old Black and Unknown Bard was one of the poems as well. I'd like for you to go out and find those poems and engage yourself, ladies and gentlemen. Become a journalist and start writing and jot down poems. Omi has been working on her second book. I'm working on my second book now, and near completion of that. And I think you'll find some of the on-demand tapes where I did recite some of the poetry. Because of time constraints, I can't continue today to recite that. But however, nevertheless, at the bottom of this page, there are a few samples for my first book. Please go down and purchase some of those samples for 99 cents. I have T-shirts there, as well as, what else do I have at the bottom of that page? There's T-shirts, and I also have my my sample CDs. And I want you to also understand that I do this out of the love for writing. I'm a literary poet, international lecturer, as well as trainer. And I'm hoping to advance my level to spoken word and voiceover. That's right. Yes, I do this because I wanted to engage myself to move to another level. Now, we've been talking about African American. This is the end of African History Month. I wanted to bring it to you, ladies and gentlemen, throughout the month. And my whole purpose was to introduce you to artists and times and eras of time. As much as I love history, I hope you love history, and especially African Americans, that you are breaking bread with your children to teach them about history. Now, let me step over here as I get ready to do my libation. You know I cannot leave without doing libation. Ladies and gentlemen, as we get ready to do libation, I'm going to set a candle for my mother's spirit, and I say, Ashe. I set a candle for my father's spirit, and I say, Ashe. I pour libation for my father's spirit. I say, Ashe. I pour water for my mother's spirit, and I say, Ashe. I call on my ancestors. I pour libation to the north, and I say, Ashe, libation. I pour libations to the south, and I say, libation. Libation. I pour libation to the east, and I say, libation. Libation. I pour libation to the west, and I say, libation. I call on Robert Jenkins, Ashe, Clara Jenkins, Ashe, Tommy Pete Harvey, Ashe, Essie Lee Pope, Ashe, Mary Lou Hawkins, Ashe. I call on the name of Marvin Jenkins, Ashe, Robert Jenkins, Ashe. I call on Sam Lilly, Ashe, George Lilly, Ashe. I call on the name of Isa Lily Ashe, Bessie Lily Ashe, Nishal Lily Ashe, Ludell James Ashe, Lucille Day Ashe, Louise Laura Ashe. I call on Sam Lily, George Lily. I call on Emmanuel Day, Elijah Day, Avery Day. I call on Tom Harvey, Michelle Harvey, and Michael Harvey. And I say Ashe. I say, so be it, so let it be done. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to thank you for going on a talking tour with me. If you have any needs now, and if there are problems in your life, as you know, we preached on some issues yesterday, and those issues were to bring about a change. I think God Almighty has made those changes. And what I want to say to you, ladies and gentlemen, there is a mighty wind blowing out here, different concepts, philosophies, but we know there's nothing new under the sun. We've got to hold tight to what we believe, lest we fall to be a castaway. We've got to hold tight to our God and our Creator, and we've got to fellowship with Him. And I didn't say go to church. Personal fellowship, turning on your music and praising God, paying homage to Him, pouring libation, and bowing down before Him. He inhabits our praises, ladies and gentlemen. I don't care what you came from. it might have been wrong, or you might have been worshiping toads and fogs, and you might have been worshiping rocks and stones, or you might have been worshiping the clouds, the skies, and trees. I don't care what you came from. The real question is, where are you going? Do you know where you're going? Do you know where to? Do you like the things that light is showing you? What are you hoping for? Do you know? I want to know, do you know, ladies and gentlemen? Because you can't be shaken when you know for sure what it is you place your hope into. Place your hope into something, ladies and gentlemen, and stay with it for the long haul. Don't let a wind come and blow you, and don't let a little verse or scripture come and jog you, because it will come, but you must remain steadfast in what you believe, and you must hold on to it like dear life. Men will come and bring you many doctrines, and there will be many doctrines out there, but there is nothing new under the sun. Hold on. Hold on to the concept of a loving God. Hold on to the concept of a caring God, one that will vindicate you, not one that will leave you to yourself. Lean not on your own understanding, but to lean on God, and he will direct your path. Flesh and blood will fail you, and the legs of a man will fail you. That means if you're in a church, do not make the mistake of thinking that therein lies your salvation. Your salvation lies with your relationship that you've developed with God over time. I know it looks shadow now. I know you don't know what to do sometimes, but prostrate yourself before God and surrender and give everything to him in prayer. He will work it out. How can one or two walk together unless they both agree? If your brother is walking on the other side of the street, don't go along to get along. Stay steadfast and committed to what you believe. Eventually, you'll win him over. Oh, God will win him over. You begin to pour the water, to water and to feed and to give scriptures, and watch God give the increase. Yes, I'm a Christian. That's my foundation. I can't walk away from it. However, when I was a child, I thought as a child, and I did the things of a child. Now that I'm older and know better, I can do the things of an adult and grow into consciousness and develop a way of life, not a religion, but a way of life, so that my way of life, my religion will spring up from. Ladies and gentlemen, don't be double-minded. Let the Spirit lead you and guide you in all truth. Don't let someone shake you, and don't let someone take your salvation from you for fear of a new doctrine. Hold on to what you have used in your life to give you relationship and a connection to God, and you will find your way, ladies and gentlemen. We always do when we stay close to God. And God has not given us a spirit of fear, but a power and a sound mind. He said, lean not on our own understanding. He'll direct our path. He will vindicate our adversary in due time. We must separate ourselves from those who don't do the will of God, lest we become a castaway. We cannot vindicate our adversary the way that the commoners do. We have to allow God to fight our battles, and he will fight your battles. I know he will, and he'll give you the mindset of God. Keep searching for him within yourself. All are found within yourself. Find the solution today. You can find that solution. Poetry will bring you sedatives, and it will soothe your heart. Do not forget what our ancestors did to keep their peace. They listened to various different poetry. You can do the same thing. Find your way through literary poetry and have a great Black History Month. What's left of it, go somewhere and hear a speech or a word about our ancestors and what they did. Thank you for joining me during this segment, and we are looking forward to a great ending. You don't want to miss it, ladies and gentlemen. Friday is coming up, and we're going to be kicking it off with something brand new. we're going to enjoy ourselves Friday. I look forward to seeing you there, ladies and gentlemen. Don't meet me there. Meet me there. Have a great evening, and may God bless. And I say to all of you, show up with the dancing shoes, because we're going to be in rare form. Rare form, ladies and gentlemen. And once again, thank you for being a part of Black History Month for Blog Talk, Care to Read. Thank you for being a part, and this program has been underwritten by Project 2019, and we do appreciate all of you. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm not going anywhere. I'm not joining any organization. I'm going to better myself right where I am. And God will continue to use me. And to those who need help with the workers out there, guess what? I have a vision and a mission for this world, too. And I'm looking for the same thing. I'm not going to divide myself and hurt myself then. I'm going to do the will of my Father and allow Him to use me and to spread the word to all families about who they choose. Conscious way of life by learning their Black consciousness and who they are. Continue to study your Black history and learn what great things that were done in history and improve yourself. Share your knowledge with all people because we ought to advocate all civilization for all people. And during this Black History Month, make sure that you're shedding the light on someone by giving them information about an African-American's accomplishment. And as we talked about the Renaissance and the mid-40s, you have something to carry you through, and you've walked away with all of this consciousness about the artists, about the designers, and about the many people who built the institution. You have a little more knowledge now. You can pick them up and carry the load lightly now. And my prayer for you is that you become more conscious in your African study. You'll become more conscious, and Caucasian people read about what we've written about ourselves and see what we think about our heritage. It's okay. We've read your books. Now read our books and come into consciousness with us so that you can go back into your schools and you can print the truth and you can unveil new knowledge to your students. We thank you for joining us, and we welcome all people here to this room because we know if there's a solution to help better ourselves, we have to better all races. Not just African Americans. We first have to clean ourselves up and advance ourselves. Then we reach back and help some other people better themselves. I know we can do it. It's in our genes. It's in our intuitiveness to be a better people. I look forward to seeing a better world, a new world, with Africans sharing in part where they are able to come to the table, able to bring their part without someone integrating, taking away.